So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. In the debate over policing and law enforcement, there's no more emotional issue than police body cameras like this one. A committee in the Capitol has been working on an issue, studying the issue for months. It may or may not offer a bill that will be debated in the next session of the Wisconsin legislature. Somebody that has studied the issue of body cameras for a long time, Madison Police Chief Mike Koval, former FBI agent, 35 years with the Madison Police Department. Thanks for coming in, Chief.
Well, thank you for hosting me.
Thanks for bringing the prop.
Yeah, I know. That's the elusive prey right now. Will it or won't it be coming to a theater near you, in this case, the city of Madison?
Well, let's stop back. You're a professional law officer. Do you consider this?
That's the nicest thing someone said recently, so thank you very much.
Friend or an adversary of professional officers like you?
Well, I'll tell you know, I'm not good at politics.
It's
kind of heavy.
Yeah.
I'm not one for politics, but I'd have to say it depends, because I think that the trap of technology is that somehow you can purchase and access community trust merely through a mechanism that provides transparency. And yet, as I think we'll have an opportunity to explore a little further in our conversation, if you think what the objectives of this technology is, it's obviously twofold.
Okay.
One of which would be transparency.
Hold that up a little bit for the camera.
All right.
Thank you.
One of which would be transparency.
Yeah.
And the other, of course, being accountability.
Yeah.
And yet, in spite of those dual purposes, one does not necessarily beget the other. Let me just give you a quick working example. If you were to YouTube the Eric Garner incident in New York City,
yes,
where he was choked out for basically selling cigarettes without a license or without collecting a tax, whatever the forfeiture may be. In that instance, we have over 13 million hits on YouTube. Lots of eyeballs saw what happened and the series of events which led to his death. And yet, if you ask the local yokels, those who live in and about that neighborhood, whether there was also commensurate accountability, they would universally say no. Because though there may have been a public spectacle which called for additional investigation, while there may have been a lawful death lawsuit which resulted in millions of dollars being paid to someone who lost a loved one, to those individuals who live, work, play, and reside in that area, they don't feel that a measure of accountability was necessarily the kind of outcome, because those cops really suffered no criminal culpability, and the insurance took care of the civil liability. So from that standpoint, I don't know that you can always necessarily suggest that transparency and accountability are a hand-in-glove proposition.
Are you saying then that there are so many exigent circumstances?
I love it when you talk like that. That's a legal term.
But neither one of us are lawyers. there are so many other circumstances that the footage from a body camera like that is just part of the picture?
I think it's a part. And where I was trying to go earlier is that my concern is that people who think that if all we do is introduce this technology into our workplace, into the dynamics of interactions on a day-to-day basis with cops and constituents, that somehow we have this perfect one-size-fits-all elixir that's going to mean trust has now been generated. And my only skepticism is that I don't think trust can be purchased. I don't think it can be bought or proffered merely because you have a camera. A lot of the big departments that have gone to the cameras have gone there because they've got one step on a banana peel, the other in the grave for a consent decree or Department of Justice edict
from
or
the
mandate.
U.S. Just,
exactly.
Justice Department.
So desperate times call for desperate measures on the part of some of these departments. Now, I'm not saying that, in fact, the end-all motivation for all people, because I think a lot of the smaller departments and the like do put a stock and trade in this as a complementary piece to building trust. But my concern is that we are setting a bar of false expectations to assume that once cameras arrive, ergo, trust has also arrived simultaneously.
Part of this, what I find fascinating is you were in charge, or you were a sergeant, I think, for recruiting and training for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, are your officers, you may have just sworn in a new batch, do they have an expectation that every stop they make, every action they take, there's going to be somebody out there with their own iPhone recording it? Is that now standard for your officers as part of their training, sir?
Absolutely. They have to understand that when we're doing our work, largely in public places and spaces, that even if we don't have cameras, they should make the assumption that everybody else does. On any given weekend, down on State Street or the 600 block University here in Madison, anytime our cops cluster or go towards someone who's creating a disturbance, they can rest assured that cell phones are being whipped out from start to finish. And that is becoming a basis of a lot of complaints about cops who are acting or misbehaving badly, which is appropriate. We want to police those who are violating our code of conduct and our policies. But yes, to your greater point is they have to know. If they don't, then they're living in a never-never world.
But then don't they want cameras like this to defend themselves and tell the world through this footage, hey, I behave professionally?
Well, that's
and what is alleged on the social media is not true, and there's footage to prove it?
Sure. I think that if I, and again, it's anecdotal, I have 477 cops, and almost overwhelmingly, when I ask in our conversations at briefings or at roll calls, I'll say, what say you? And I have had officers proactively come to me and say, Chief, we want the cameras. We're proud of our work. We have nothing to hide. Bring it on, baby. We want to show our side of that story, if you will. Heck, a few of them asked if they could literally just go down to their local Best Buy, buy a GoPro, and just pilot a project by slapping it on their baseball cap.
And
or
the
something.
Answer is no, because you have to have uniform standards.
You have to have uniform standards, protocols,
size with
and serving space for all this. This mechanism, the physicality of this camera, is the proverbial tip of the iceberg. It's serving space. It's getting people to catalog, retain, identify that which is evidentiary and that which is not. And what are we going to film? We have to have a community buy-in before that. So there's a lot of economic and philosophical conversations that have to take place before a community is ready to invest in this.
Well, you've been thoughtfully looking at the body camera issue mm-hmm. for a number of years. What do you know now that you didn't know 5-6 years ago?
What I know is that as I walk about the city of Madison and do constituent engagement is that one would think that this would have a universal appeal. And yet, when I talk to a number of diverse groups, many of which I will go so far as to say are underrepresented demographically, mm-hmm. there are some strong reservations on a couple of levels. Privacy means a lot to everyone, and someone who might be having a verbal domestic argument with one's partner, when they realize that when we go and separate, isolate an interview to ensure that it's only a verbal altercation, the thought that their entire apartment or home is being panned, and where is that footage going? Well, it's going to go somewhere for at least 90 days on a schedule, retention schedule. And once the investigation is closed, the current legislative interpretation is that that becomes an open record. So would a third-party voyeuristic person with intent to distribute on YouTube or some other means access it and routinely put it on as a form of glorified reality television? It's happened out in the state of Washington. The other thing is that I find from, particularly from people of color, is that this does not help create an environment where they feel comfortable in having those candid conversations. Neighborhood officers say it's a wet blanket. It's sort of a deterrent to having people openly and honestly engage with us. What about in Madison, for example? I have every reason to believe that I have a lot of people who are living in the shadows. Those folks are not necessarily coming forward now owing to concerns and suppositions about ICE and deportation. So I don't have a clear understanding of whether crimes in real time are being reported to me by victims or by witnesses of crimes. And so imagine now that you're introducing this component into that algorithm. That only intensifies that sense of concern, fear, trepidation about what is the bare bones outcome of what's going to happen to that. So again, we could talk about people who have been sexually assaulted in relating their concerns. We could talk about juveniles and their privacy. We look at juveniles as our opportunities for greatest hopes of redemption and reform, and that people can make mistakes. And owing to the maturational process, given the right cues, the right direction, the right wraparound services, will not offend again. But why are we violating those confidentiality or fiduciary relationships? So there's a host of complex ideas that aren't quite as easily discernible that one might think.
You mentioned the African-American community. You're well aware nationally there are the advocates and their family members for Michael Brown and Freddie Gray and Laquan McDonald.
Well, and even to our own extent here in Madison with Tony Robinson's
death. Thank you. On Willie Street, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of people who say, and I understand where they're coming from, something is better than nothing in providing that measure of accountability and to give people that sense that someone is going to have to explain or reconcile their actions with a tragic outcome like what you're seeing. And I agree, but again, the technology is such that you're sort of getting sort of a life in a very surreal kind of contrived lens crafter here, right? Because it also doesn't tell the tale, the tape, in terms of dimensionality, your senses, and all those other tonal things that we sort of put into this greater sense of understanding the holistic picture or the totality of those circumstances. So again, I understand that in communities that have suffered, as we have, a tragic outcome, that the camera in and of itself represents a first offering of first hope or an encouragement that cops who are engaging in unlawful actions might be held more accountable. And yet I've also seen studies that have been fairly widely disseminated that even when cops have these cameras on, it doesn't show a depreciable difference in the use of recordable force or things like that, as one would think that once you know that you're conspicuously being monitored, well, that's going to diminish the use of force, surely, if the officers know that that's the case. But I have not seen, replicated evidence that says that that's demonstrably been proven.
Have the allegations from African-American leaders nationally that there are too many instances and when white officers shoot first and ask questions later, has that obscured the serious moral, ethical, and technical issues that you've been talking about?
It very well may be that in some communities that conversation has to be jump-started to the point that there's a sense of urgency. Urgency plus accountability. And I think every community has to look at this issue uniquely compared to what are the needs. So let's just look at Madison for a minute. A couple of years ago, the Common Council commissioned the YWCA to do a micro study, if you will, in talking to underrepresented communities within our midst. And interestingly enough, the findings from that was that when people are told what will it cost the city in terms of the expenses, both initial and ongoing, versus what those costs could be in other ways, they'd rather see that same money earmarked for technology and upkeep and operating expenses. They'd rather see that same money going into neighborhood centers, job training, opportunities for youth employment. So for many, the camera has become part of an either-or proposition. Do you want more social initiatives and programming to result, or is the trust factor so intentionally flawed that we think we need to correct for that steerage with having technology introduced through the use of these cameras?
What was your reaction when you saw the Chicago footage where the officer shot Laquan McDonald 17 times? Now, he was walking away. He did have a knife. Mm-hmm. Your reaction as a professional officer?
Well, even as a professional officer, as or as a human being that has sons myself, the optics were awful. There's no ifs, and, or buts. Most use of force issues are not choreographed and anywhere near as staged as cleanly as what we've come to understand or expect from sort of the media and the movies and all those Action Jackson shows. But in particular, when you see the sheer volume of the rounds fired and under the basis of what those circumstances were, one can understand where anyone could see where a reasonable person's sensibilities would be offended by having to watch that carnage.
And there was a political fallout. Mayor Rahm Emanuel chose not to seek re-election. The police superintendent was dismissed. Mm-hmm. So you have these very real actions, which some police camera footage document. Then you have the political response.
Sure.
So there is so many nuances to
Absolutely.
This debate.
And that's why, for me, people have said that I've been, this is rare for me, usually I say what I mean and I mean what I say, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. But on the issue of the body-worn cameras, I've been decidedly in the middle, compelling the community to have an active discussion about this. Because, mm-hmm. for example, Steve, if I just say unilaterally, the cops want the cameras, it's now a budget priority, deal with it.
How much does that one cost?
Well, this, again, is the tip of the iceberg. You know, we're talking about a couple $100 just for this, but it's all the accoutrements.
That's the one that would be born.
This is one that could be born on the chest, in
okay,
the chest
excuse
cavity.
Me, go ahead.
Sure, yeah. But for me, to get us outfitted as a startup proposition for
the 477 officers.
Well, we don't use it for field services, so that's like 335. There's detectives in there and other people like paper tigers like me that probably wouldn't need one. But for those that are assigned to the field, you should have one. Everyone should have their own according to the ACLU best practices manual on these kind of camera issues and less subject to excuses and to tampering. But do you want at this juncture to invest $1 million in startup costs, or would you like to see $1 million go to neighborhood resource centers and a mm-hmm. bunch of programming? And that's where I don't want the cops backed into the corner, triangulated, because there the cops go again. They're already the own the lion's share of any municipal budget, and yet they still want more, that appetite that won't be fed. I have to be cognizant of the privacy interests that have been brought forward. I have to be privacy of the underrepresented groups who have told me repeatedly that the cameras aren't the cure, and in fact, they will impede relationship building. And then I have to understand the economics of what does social initiatives, what do they go for? Because I'm hearing a clamoring for people that say that that would be a better use of precious city commodities. So given that, I think it has to be at the hands of public officials who ultimately decide. Now, they say yes, we're there.
Yep.
I'm not going to fight it.
Because that policy decision has been made.
Yeah.
But are these policy decisions that I alluded to earlier, the study committee in the Capitol?
Yeah.
Can you write a law for the whole state, or should this be done on a community by community, where each community develops standards, makes a policy call, we're going to use these or not, mm-hmm. and here are the standards under which we're going to use them? So state law or local?
Well, I like local law only because I think it's more responsive to the unique needs of Madison. Let's take a total constitutional issue, for example, the issue of consent to search. Now, constitutionally speaking, I could go up to 20 people waiting at a bus stop and ask them all in that public place and public space, I could go up to each one and say, hey, in the spirit of community neighborhood safety, would you mind letting me see what's in your backpack? Would you mind turning out your pocket? Can I look at in your backpack? Things like that.
Right.
According to the constitutional case law matters, as long as it's voluntary, knowing, and intelligently provided, an officer could arguably engage in that kind of wholesale consent search proposition.
Mm-hmm.
But MPD and this community, which says that we want to strike a chord for greater public trust, I think it's diminishing returns to think that if I engage in that behavior routinely, that's not going to foster trust. That's going to foster a very malcontent constituency group that aren't going to trust the police. So our policy at the MPD is there has to at least be some underlying articulable rationale to ask for a consent search, not just because you can, but because we're going to be more restrictive than what the constitutional requirements are. Right. And I think that in Madison, a community that's very eclectic and is very passionate about a lot of these public debates, what might work in Ashland is going to be something that is too minimalist for us and for the privacy issues and advocates here in Madison. And I think that's okay, as long as the state articulates some minimum standards but gives license to the community standards to meet and exceed those minimal foundations.
Update us. What's the status in Madison? I know it's been debated by the council. It's not part of the 2019 budget.
Right.
What's the status of the debate over cameras in Madison, sir?
Well, the debate over the last two budget cycles has been largely that the council and the mayor have decided that the finite resources we have are better spent on social initiatives and reforms and neighborhood resource needs, and that this is a nice-to-have commodity, not a need-to-have commodity, plus the issues of public interest and acceptance of this have yet to be more deeply explored. And so unless or until such time as there's a more community-wide intentional conversation about body-worn cameras, I don't expect we'll see them for another year at least.
As I look through the issue and do some national research, there's such a number of questions. Let's say that the Madison Council said all of your 325 officers
that are assigned to field.
Right. Your field officers, 325, will have cameras beginning in 2020. Mm-hmm. But then the questions that must be answered, who should wear them, when, turn them on under what circumstances? Once you leave a vehicle or once you're on State Street after a football game, mm-hmm. just do you continually leave it on? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's the thing. I think that that's another part of the layered conversation we have to have with the community. My sense is that if you're a card-carrying, strictly adhering to an ACLU proposition, the minute you get out of briefing and the sensitive details of what we're looking for, stolen cars, wanted people, is done, the minute you get out, it's on and it's always on. And the only time you can take it off is if you're going to the bathroom or having lunch or something. But other than that, it should stay on, and that the officer has to write a report for those times when it's off. So that's sort of an all-encompassing.
So once an officer, she or he begins a shift, this would be automatically on?
Under one precept. Under one precept. That's one philosophy on sort of one range. The others would say any time there is perhaps a contentious issue where the officer may lay out of hands, or whether there's a citation, or whether there's a potential physical arrest,
right.
or whether there's an incident that lends itself to suggesting that probable cause is being developed. There's lots of gradients or iterations that have to be explored.
Well, let's go back to the privacy issue.
Yeah.
Your officers deal with people that are traumatized because they've been victims.
Absolutely. Or witnesses.
Sometimes your witnesses or victims may have been drinking.
But they
have been a victim of crimes, or they witnessed crimes, but they are have been drinking, or they're high on something.
Mm-hmm.
Or if your officers knock on a door because they've been summoned to a burglary, someone may come to the door in their his or her underwear. Those are privacy issues.
Absolutely they are. And again, that's sort of...
Do your officers then need the right, if they are ordered from Madison, to turn that off? Or you just said, as long as they're not bathroom or lunch or meal, keep them on.
No, what I was suggesting
What about
that,
discretion?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Some, like the more comprehensive ones that I first discussed, where it's always on unless it's a very narrow exception,
mm-hmm.
those are the kinds of issues that basically it's all fair game if you're in a public place or you've been invited into someone's home. You're there lawfully. What I've suggested, though, is that you're going to see, moreover, a sort of a hybridization where there is an element where the officer has a little bit more modicum for discretion, but you're not leaving it wholly up to discretion, depending on whether there could be a use of force, a ticket, or an arrest situation.
Okay.
And in those situations, then there is a compulsion to turn it on. But again, I think those are the kinds of healthy conversations that we need to have as a community, with a facilitated, strong conversation about what are the unintended consequences of unabridged transparency. Have we thought that out?
And what is the current law in Wisconsin? I don't know, in terms of when this footage must be made public, because the footage in Chicago took years to come out. Is there a standard? Is there a law in Wisconsin?
Well, right now, as you mentioned, it's in committee in terms of what will be the operating parameters on a statewide basis.
What's your feeling on that, though? If you were testifying before that committee, you probably already have.
But to do?
In terms of when it should be made public.
Oh, well, I think that at the point in which it has been exhausted as an active investigation, where it has seen it's gone through its crime and conviction or acquittal or charges dismissed, when the case is now resolved, then obviously that is a record that is subject to redactions, and you can do some redactions under privacy issues.
But isn't there a double standard here where if a bystander puts their own cell phone on the officer interacting mm-hmm. with a suspect, someone being taken into custody, they can put that up on social media in the next minute.
Yeah, they can.
And they have.
And they have.
So, meanwhile, the officially conducted camera footage then should remain private until a charging decision?
Well, I think that until such time, there are incidents which are non-crime. There are forfeitures, which are non-crime. Then there are crimes, which fall into felonies and misdemeanors. So clearly, if the footage arguably has evidentiary value, one can see that until such time as that forfeiture or crime has been resolved, that it should be considered as private to the proceedings or unique to the proceedings and not subject to alteration or putting out there before we have a chance to sort of see the wheels of justice reach their fruition. But it's the non-incidents, the domestic that doesn't result in an arrest or things like that, that are fair game really as an open record unless until the Wisconsin legislature speaks in some sort of a bill.
And then you have reporters like me who continually ask the department.
The Fourth Estate, God.
Is there footage? Is there footage?
Yeah,
can
you're gonna
we
ask
have
all
it
the time.
Under the open records law?
Yeah.
And your agency has to respond, what?
Yes, it is an open record. These videos are considered the functional equivalent to an open records request. So it would be processed like any paper open records request. And for us, I'm going to have to get more budget, Mr. Mayor, because if these become open records, we already are one of the top 2 to 3 users of open records requests on an annual basis for paper records, in excess of 28,000 a year. Now you add all of this stuff into it, and I'm going to have to do a whole lot more in terms of my server, in terms of people to catalog and identify and do shelf life retention schedules and open records requests.
When a bystander puts his or her cell phone mm-hmm. on a officer suspect yeah. interaction and then calls up the TV station and says, I can give you this, your agency doesn't say, well, don't run it because you have no standing at
exactly.
that point.
Exactly. It's not ours.
But are there examples where the station runs it and that has hurt the ultimate investigation and resolution of that potential crime?
I think that I think it can go both ways, because sometimes we've clearly seen with some of these doorknob technologies with the cameras, when you ring the bell or come approach, they're flying off the shelves here this Christmas, but oftentimes that footage can be very helpful to the police in identifying potential suspect or suspects, right?
Yes.
And of course, then we like it. But on the other hand, as due diligent officers of the court, if that footage is so pejorative, so inflammatory, so incriminating, before the person has even had a chance to have their day in court, then I worry about it tainting a jury pool or having an undue influence on fundamental fairness to the proceedings of the court.
And
so it's that two-edged sword.
In those examples, some of your officers might say, well, I just saw that on channel XYZ.
Right.
That doesn't show the other half of my conduct in that incident, Chief.
And context,
what can we do about it?
Yeah, exactly. Context is everything. And that's again, one of the limitations is that while this is a window on transparency, it is a window that has parameters and limitations. It's not the be-all, end-all, the one-size-fits-all. And that is, again, one as the technology improves, hopefully we'll continue to get closer to that. But it still has its limitations, and we have to be honest.
On your webpage, you talk about leadership's attributes, excuse me, competence, character, caring, commitment, and collegiality.
You got the five C's, good man.
Where does cameras fit
it
in?
It might have to be the sixth C, because ultimately that's where the trending is, right? I mean, these days, between the host of reality shows and the various things I see that are exposed, even on our local news, with people that are doing their homemade ones or turning them over to the newsies, you're right. I think we might have to say, where do cameras fall into those values? But again, this is an inanimate object, and you're speaking to something that goes to the core of something
of
deeper.
Your leadership, yes. Well, you started with the Madison Police Department in 1983. Are we better off, fast forward 35 years later, because of this technology and the debate that it engenders in all these different ways?
I think on balance, because I can't preclude levels of mistrust, perceptions about police unaccountability, and so forth, that on balance, that in the longitudinal look, transparency, albeit through this mechanism, mm-hmm. is something that's here to stay and will ultimately be adopted more universally. But my concern, again, is not providing false hopes of expectations that somehow this is going to fix all that ails us with those constituent and cop relationships. I think it's sort of putting a Band-Aid on where something much more major has to be looked at and probed and facilitated.
And then a final question in terms of Madison. Because of all these factors that have to be resolved, Matt, you're not ready yet to recommend that your 325 field officers have these?
No, what we were saying is that we're amenable to doing even a pilot analysis. I have six districts and we do it in one district. Okay. If the council feels that there is now an appetite or a necessity, an urgency to look at cameras because the public wants them and is asking for them, is demanding them, then by all means, I'm saying bring it on. But I'm just saying, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. It has its unintended consequences and fiscal realities.
And as you live in the city and visit, you're not hearing the public saying, bring these on, are you,
Chief? I'm not. Now, some of my folks that I go to at neighborhood focus groups and some of our elected officials say, Chief, it's time. You're behind the learning curve on this. We need to have greater transparency. The camera offers that. But for every one of those that I hear, bring it on, I hear as many voices, at least thus far, to say, no, the money that we could have used on cameras, we'd rather put here. Or we believe that this is not the panacea that's going to get us closer to authentic relationships with the police.
Thank you. Madison Chief Mike Koval and camera.
Thanks
you, sir.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Always
thank you very
appreciate
much.
It. Thank you.
Thanks.